Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Baldy's Breakdowns, the podcast, a radio.com sports original.
Welcome to episode number 6 of Baldy's Breakdowns. The countdown to the NFL draft is on. Jason Mertidis, Brian Baldinger, a radio.com original here as we get ready for the NFL draft. Baldy, self-isolation going to pay dividends come draft night.
Yeah, you know, I mean, really, like I've kind of said in the last couple podcasts, Jason, I mean, I naturally self-isolate anyways. I mean, it's the only way you can really kind of break these things down. I mean, I just tell you, just this morning, I figured, I had like a free hour and a half. So I just threw it out there to the Twitter world. Like, any draft question you have, I'm here. So, I mean, they just started flying into Baldy's Breakdowns, right? So I started answering the questions the best I could. And a couple guys, you know, I gave them a quick little video of some guys that, you know, aren't real well-known, small college-type guys. And next thing I know, an hour and a half is up. And, like, the questions kept coming. And the point is, like, you can get carried away with this stuff to the point where you're not doing your work. And, you know, you're trying to give your information out that you've gotten, that you've gleaned, that you've learned. And all of a sudden, all those cornerbacks you're going to study today, like, you haven't gotten to them yet. So to answer your question, yes, I'm healthy. My oldest sister came down with COVID-19. Fortunately, like 5 days later, it wasn't one of those people that really, you know, knocked her out completely, hospitalized her. She got through it pretty good, but it's kind of scary when a family member of yours gets it. And, sure. But, you know, I mean, we're all kind of dealing with this here. So for me, I'm dealing with it almost the way I would normally be dealing with my regular life at this point, two weeks and 2 days before the draft. I mean, I'm just hunkered down right now and trying to learn as much as I can.
Well, we're going to hunker down with Matt Rhule coming up on this episode as well, Baldy. The first year with Rhule as the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. Boy, he got a curveball thrown at him in his first taste in the National Football League as a head coach. He was with the New York Giants years ago in a coordinator position, a different position. But to be in this role, we'll talk to Matt Rhule. Also, Baldy, we're going to come up and look at the all-decade team that happened that was just announced this week in the NFL. I want to get your take on the 2010s all-decade team. There's some unanimous choices, both sides of the football, and the coaches are pretty much what you would expect. We'll get to that. But I want to start with the draft because the draft is, as you mentioned, it's now 16 days away from when we're taping here. And, you know, there's been some conjecture out there that they should delay this, that they should not delay it. They're going to do it virtually or digitally, however you want to term it. How do you expect this draft to go? And will it go off without a hitch? Because I know one of the things that teams are concerned with is that their Zoom accounts get hacked and people know what they're going to do. This is, I guess, you know, very today and what's going on, but this is what people are dealing with.
Well, it's true. And I don't know all the details yet, Jason, to be honest with you, because I think they're still getting worked out at a high level. Now, remember, I mean, you've got X amount of minutes, you know, in the first round, second round, third round in order to make your picks. So, like, are they going to have a virtual clock? I imagine they will, that will show up on everybody's Zoom account or wherever they're going to do this. I can't believe that something that is this intricate, this top secret, all of these, you know, I mean, this protected, that it's going to go off without a hitch. I mean, I don't know what the problems might be. I could kind of guess that the clock is going to be an issue? Making trades, Jason, getting the information, like we always watch, you know, wherever it has been, whether it's been at Radio City Music Hall or, you know, in one of the venues, Philadelphia, Nashville, all the places it's been over the last few years. We've always watched the cards come in. There's a trade. We're all alerted. We're all kind of, you know, as analysts, we're all sort of guessing who it's for, what the compensation, like all that information that, you know, a guy like Daniel Jeremiah would get out for the NFL Network or Adam Schefter or one of the insiders, Jay Glazer, all the insiders that could give you that information. You know, like how is that all going to get out? And so it is an unbelievable exercise that you really can't prepare for. Like you can't have a mock, you know, no pun, but you can't really have a mock draft to get ready for the draft. But you really need one to really kind of practice how this thing can go off to really eliminate bugs that are bound to pop up in something that is so novel and unprecedented.
Yeah, and the thing is, Baldy, too, like you look at a team like Miami, they have three picks in the first round. It may be incumbent upon them to really get any draft day deals done in advance, because if there is technical errors or anything, for things to happen, you know, at the goal line, pardon the pun, maybe really taking a chance. And like Miami, I mean, they got the number 5 and 6 picks in the top 70. They got a lot going on.
Right. So last week we had Mike Tannenbaum on, who was, you know, former general manager of both the Jets and the Dolphins. He talked about, you know, the draft in, I guess it's 2015, where Laremy Tunsil was their number one player on the board. And, you know, video broke out of him, you know, the day before, and his stock dropped. And there the Dolphins are at 13, getting their number one player in the draft with the 13th pick. Now, I mean, that kind of stuff is not unprecedented. We saw that with Lyle Collins the day before his draft coming out of LSU. And, you know, whether he was involved in a, you know, a really bad situation at school or he wasn't involved, there wasn't a whole lot of time to really do your diligence. And he ended up not getting drafted at all. And the Cowboys got themselves a starting right tackle for the price of a free agent, you know, player. So I don't know how that stuff is going to get handled, because those kind of things can pop up at any time, Jason.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Baldy, with this draft, because I think we saw for the first year in the NFL last year, I don't want to say tanking, like trust the process, what the Sixers did, but what Miami did was clear. They were not in it to win last year. They were in it to accumulate, trade away, pedigreed players to get those picks, and now they're heading to this draft with all this draft capital, but can they turn that in these unique circumstances into a windfall for them is the question. And you have some other teams that, you know, look at the Detroit Lions. Are they a team that is going to, are they going to sit with Matthew Stafford, or do they have a plan that they're going to try and execute at this draft?
Well, I mean, those things are always held tight to the vest. Some teams do have leaks and that stuff gets out. Other teams, you know, we live in the Philadelphia area. I mean, there's just not a leak in Philadelphia, and there hasn't been in years. A lot of the things that they have done, both free agency and the draft over the last few years, really have caught a lot of people by surprise, because there was just really nothing coming out of their buildings. Now, not every building is like that. So, your initial question, Jason, to me was, is it better to get these deals done the day before? And I don't know if I really answered it. It might be this year. It might be better to get deals done in advance. Yeah. So you know where you stand and what you have going on. The fact that there's no visual really to this, the way, and I don't know, you know, maybe there will be split screens and another screen where, you know, there's not going to be the visual that we have seen. So it's going to be kind of a, it's not going to be blind, because everybody's got their boards and the boards are set and they're protected. And as names come off, they'll get crossed off. I don't know. Right now, Jason, the way this thing is, I feel like we're sort of in the dark, literally in the dark. I don't know that we'll get as many trades done or made while the draft is in the process that we have seen in the past, because people might feel so blinded. I mean, you think about the draft 3 years ago with Patrick Mahomes, and here comes the Chiefs, you know, from the, 24th pick to get to number 10. to take Patrick Mahomes. I mean, it was one of those blockbuster type of deals. Or even last year, the Eagles just jumping up a few spots in front of the Texans to get the tackle they wanted, Andre Dillard. I mean, those kind of deals might still get done, but I have a feeling that people just aren't going to be as comfortable in the format that they're going to be faced with as they have been in the past to do these kind of things.
A lot of times the groundwork for these deals, they happen in face-to-face situations, and you're not having those this year. So, you know, patience, far different than it's ever been. And things need to happen very quickly at the draft, because if it drops to you and all of a sudden you go, oh, wow, we're at 9. We got to get up to 7 to grab this guy. And you got to, it's a lot more difficult with all of these. We're in a technological age, but in the dark ages when it comes to kind of seeing how this is going to unfold.
Well, I think, you know, I don't know that the format yet, Jason, has been fully finalized by the NFL. Otherwise, I think we would have read something from Peter King or, you know, or Ian at the NFL Network or, you know, Schefter or somebody about how this thing is really going to go. Because if I was in my draft meetings right now, like Matt Rhule's in a draft meeting right now, the Eagles are in draft meetings today. I mean, you would want to practice this as much as you possibly can, you know, using the technology, what we're going to be able to see, how we're going to set up our war room to be able to accommodate the non-visuals that we're used to having. I mean, I would get as comfortable as I possibly could right now in the, you know, in the 16 days leading up to this draft, so that we don't feel uncomfortable when it's time to draft, when it's time to make a trade, when it's time, when you're in the countdown. Like I'd kind of want to literally set up as many mock situations as possible using the technology that's going to be used starting on Thursday night, April 23rd, just to get as familiar with the way it's going to be done. It's maybe a question we can ask Matt today, if he knows yet how it's all going to look inside their war room there in Charlotte.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's the big one right now for a lot of teams. But let me ask you a quick couple draft-related questions. First and foremost, Washington, they got Dwayne Haskins there. He was the number one pick the year prior. New coaching staff now, Ron Rivera there. Do they look for a quarterback in this draft? They're drafting high, or do they, you know, how do they approach this draft? Do they go Chase Young, the edge rusher, who's a dynamic player, or do they go quarterback, and unless they assume they have the guy there in Dwayne Haskins for the long term?
You know, if you think back a couple of years ago, you know, the Arizona Cardinals, they took Josh Rosen, I think, with the 10th pick or something like that. You know, and you know, he was there, and he struggled, like the whole team struggled in Arizona. They were last in the league in every offensive category, in 10 different offensive categories. You know, and then they make a change at the head coach, and Cliff Kingsbury comes in, and you know, they it was a badly kept secret that they badly wanted Kyler Murray. And so they blew out Josh Rosen, even though he was a high pick. But Cliff wanted a guy that he wanted. Now, you can kind of almost feel like that's going on with Mark Rivera right now. That, you know, they brought in Kyle Allen, a guy that started, won his first four starts in Carolina last year when Cam Newton went out with a Lisfranc injury. And he looked pretty darn good in those first four starts. Now, it didn't last very long. The wheels came off the whole team. But they've got Kyle Allen there that understands what he wants to do offensively. He's got, you know, he's got the same offense coordinator they had there in Charlotte, you know, coming with him, Norv Turner's son, Scott Turner. You kind of get the feeling that regardless that Dwayne Haskins was, you know, a first-round pick and all that, that they have nothing tied to Dwayne Haskins, nothing. And I could see them, if they fell in love with Tua Tagovailoa or anybody else, that they could easily pull the trigger and make the move and start building. And, or, you know, look, Chase Young is going to be a huge chess piece. I think the way Nick Bosa was a big chess piece, the way at one time Julius Peppers was the second pick in the draft, was a huge chess piece, the way Lawrence Taylor was the second pick. Lawrence Taylor, Julius Peppers, Nick Bosa were all the second pick in the draft. And they were all franchise players that helped turn their franchises around. And so, I mean, that's what you're looking at with Chase Young. And, you know, when you look at, you know, Chico, you look at Mark Rivera and what he's done and where he's been, those are the kind of players that he has built around. So it remains to be seen whether he goes, you know, a guy like that and Chase Young, or if they say, you know, let's just build this offense. Let's get the quarterback we want in here. We've got 3, 4, 5 years, whatever. Let's do it with, you know, let's build it the way we want to build it around, you know, around our guy. I mean, Cam Newton was a really mobile guy, obviously. He ran for, you know, 10 touchdowns a year. He was the MVP. There's some quarterbacks in this draft that have that ability. Dwayne Haskins does not have that ability. So is it something that they really covet? When you look at the offense last year in Carolina, when Cam Newton was there, and the year before with Cam and Scott Turner and Norv Turner calling the plays, that quarterback was a big part of the offense being a run threat. So they've got options right now, and I don't think they know yet what they're going to do.
Giants, they haven't won a postseason game since 2012. They had one winning season since 2012. That was in 2016, when somehow they won 11 games. They've moved on from Eli. We know that they took the quarterback out of Duke last year with the 6th overall pick and Daniel Jones. They have Saquon Barkley. Dave Gettleman's still there. What is the plan for the Giants heading into this draft? They got some interesting moves that they have to make. It's been too long for the Giants.
Well, I'm still not convinced that the offensive line is a finished product. 4 tackles in this draft that look like they're going to go in the top 15 picks right now. And you can kind of throw them all up in the air, whether it's, you know, Becton right now or Wirfs or Wills or, you know, Thomas. I mean, you could throw them all kind of up in the air. Everybody has kind of a different feel. I mean, do you spend the 4th pick on one of those tackles? Do you trade back and get one of the tackles that you really like, plug him and play him, and really get a wall for Daniel Jones where he's really protected and you really, you know, can get Saquon back looking like he did his rookie year, where he's an MVP candidate of the league? Or, you know, do you look at a guy like Simmons at Clemson right now with the 4th pick and go, let's start building this defense around a player that to me looks like he's got as much skill as anybody in this draft. And, you know, maybe Patrick Graham, the new defense coordinator, can figure out how best to use him. To me, he looks like a bigger, faster, stronger Derwin James. And, you know, he could play free safety. He could be your edge rusher. I mean, it looks like, and everything in between. So, if I was the Giants, I would finish my offensive line and I would get that thing done with a top flight pick right now and just build the best wall possible for what I think is going to be a really good quarterback in this league and what we know is a great running back. And then I would put all my resources on defense.
Another team, Baldy, let's head out to Las Vegas and the Las Vegas Raiders. They have the 12th and 19th pick in this draft. There's been a lot of, you know, whenever John Gruden's involved and Mike Mayock out there now, they like to be splashy. The Raiders have always liked to be splashy. Is this where they use these 2 picks to move up and make a big splash, or do they kind of sit where they are and address some needs?
Well, they filled a lot in free agency. I mean, nobody was more active in free agency than Mike Mayock and John Gruden. So I think some of the players that they signed are depth players, but, you know, Corey Littleton and what they did at linebacker look like, you know, they're going to be starters when they let Tahir Whitehead go. And you go through the whole, you know, roster of what they did. But, you know, last year, you know, with 3 first-round picks, I think they drafted 3 really solid players. I think they overdrafted, you know, for a defensive end from Clemson, and that might come back to bite them. Jonathan Abram got hurt in the first game he ever played in, but I think he's going to be a real stud at safety. You know, I think when they went out and got Marcus Mariota in free agency, I think it took them out of the quarterback market. I mean, people are still, you know, tying him to one of these quarterbacks. And, you know, I know Mayock loved Marcus coming out of Oregon. He had his number one quarterback that year. You know, and so I think Marcus Mariota going there, creating competition right now with what they have there in David Carr, I think solidifies that. I think they go, you know, just guys that change the game right now, you know, whether that's a cornerback and a wide receiver, you know, whether that's a game-changing defensive tackle like a Kinlaw right now, the offensive line is set. I think it's wide receiver and corner, if I know Mike Mayock well enough right now.
Joining us right now on Baldy's Breakdowns, boy, we were happy to have him. We put the list together of guys we wanted to get on. He was at the top of it. A former Temple coach, former Baylor coach, now coach of the Carolina Panthers, Matt Rhule joins us. Matt, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much for having me on.
Matt, it's trying circumstances for everybody. So we just talked off the air a little bit about you and your family, and you're just taking advantage of these difficult times that we're in to, you know, all be in the house together, you and your wife, Julie, and your kids eating dinner and all that kind of stuff. But that being said, Matt, obviously it's unprecedented for everybody, but for a new head coach in the NFL, it's got to be really, it's got to be a real challenge to you right now. Kind of give us a little bit here, Matt, about what you can do under the circumstances, trying to get to know a team, a staff, an organization that you can't really see on a day-to-day basis, and what some of those challenges are right now, Matt.
Well, you know, I think obviously, you know, we certainly understand, you know, that it's not ideal. At the same time, you know, every night I turn on the news and I'm flooded with pictures of, you know, people working in hospitals in New York and all over the place. So it just kind of humbly puts you back in perspective. And, you know, the thing I've tried to do is just make sure that we don't just, you know, people say control the control, but not even that, that we try to be elite at the things that maybe some other times we would just be good at. Mm-hmm. And so that might be our draft meetings and draft preparation and even going down and you know, film studying guys that didn't have a chance to have pro days, that might be undrafted free agents, trying to, as a coaching staff, really, really push ourselves, you know, further in that regard. I think, you know, in terms of having the best, you know, sometimes, as you know, Baldy, playbooks can get a little outdated and guys kind of, you know, don't really pay too much attention to it. They think, well, we'll just coach it on the run. And, you know, making sure that everything that we have is so well done, going back, you know, with a fine tooth comb over every piece of, you know, cut up every playbook, everything that we're going to use to coach the players when we're not around them when the time comes. And so I think we're just trying to make sure we do those things. And then the other thing I'll say is that what I've learned very quickly, and I have three kids, they're in three different schools, they're all using, you know, online virtual learning, is that this is really a great way to get a lot of work done. You know, I hit a button and I'm looking at, you know, my coaching staff. I'm looking at different coaches. We're watching players. There's a lot that, you know, maybe I didn't realize a month ago that you can get done. Yeah. And I think without the distractions of, you know, someone walking in your office, you know, maybe just walking over the water cooler or the coffee table, you know, coffee area and having a conversation, like I can sit down and bang out work in really, really targeted amounts of time. And so we're trying to do that. And I think it's, you know, it's, as I said, not ideal, but I think we're trying to make the most of it. And I think we are.
Just going back to when you got hired, a lot of people don't know who David Tepper is. They know he's the owner of the Carolina Panthers, but you know him differently now after going through an interview process. He obviously loved you from the jump, Matt, but can you just give us a little bit about the man that you're now working for? And, you know, a relatively new owner here of the Carolina Panthers, what he saw in you and what you liked about him?
Well, first of all, I think the things that I liked about him were, A, that he had experience, you know, coming from the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, and so he had that experience. You know, he referenced, you know, the Rooney family. He referenced, you know, Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin. You know, there's not many organizations over time that have been run quite the way that the Steelers have run, you know, been run. So I knew that he came from it knowing that, hey, that's the right way to do it, you know, to do something that's built to last and to, you know, not to get caught, you know, caught up on the short term, but to really think about how do you build something that's special. And then, you know, then you get to know him and, you know, what he's done in his life. You know, it wasn't someone whose career was just handed to him. You know, he built himself from the ground up. And that's kind of like, you know, how I see myself. And I think we saw that in each other. And then he's someone that likes to look at problems. Mm-hmm. He's someone that likes to challenge himself to find answers to things. And so, you know, he does it in the financial realm. But at the same time, that's what I wanted. I didn't want someone who said, hey, we're going to do it this way because this is the way we've always done it. I wanted to be a participant with someone who said, what is the best way to solve this problem? What is the best way to overcome this obstacle? What is the best way to tackle, you know, whatever mission we're trying to get on? And he's done that certainly at every step of his life, and he's doing it here now in the NFL. And so I was excited to be a part of that.
Hey, Matt, one of the things for you and that I noticed in your Temple days and certainly at Baylor, there's Matt Rule kind of guys, right? Can you explain to people what you look for in a football player that makes them Matt Rule kind of players? Because you're the head coach of a new team. You want to put your stamp on it, and you want to do it with guys that have the same core belief system that you have. So what are your core beliefs for players now at the NFL level?
Well, I think, you know, obviously there's some physical components. You know, we want to be big, fast, explosive. Some people say they want to do that, but like, you know, they'll kind of always go towards guys, you know, maybe who, you know, play the game a certain way or fit something. You know, I think you have to have coaches who can build the system around their players and not the other way around. And so we've always done that. You know, we've always said, let's get the best possible players. Let's not worry about positions quite as much. And then let's build the system around our players. And so we want fast guys, we want explosive guys. And then we want guys who are tough and who love football. We want guys who want to be the best. I want guys that I can count on, are going to show up each and every day and try to play the game the right way. And at the same time, you know, who are going to hold me accountable and my coaching staff accountable that we do it. And so I think there's a physical component to that. I think there's an effort component to that. There's an accountability component to that. And that's really what we've always tried to build. We tried to build a place that's, you know, that's a serious football place. You know, we don't want it to just be a show. You know, I know football's entertainment, the NFL's entertainment, I get all that. But at the end of the day, I want guys and coaches and players who are in love with the football, who, you know, want to come in after the game and turn the tape on and see the game played a certain way. You know, and so the guys I've had that are like that, I've loved coaching them. And, you know, as we went out into free agency, as we're in to find guys who are obsessed with playing the game a certain way, an uncommon way.
Matt, I'm impressed by the staff that you've put together. Of course, we all know, you know, I mean, guys that know you know Phil Snow. But, you know, to be able to get Jeremy Scott to come with you here, he's been with you every step of the way. He was there when you were at Penn State. I'm curious, you know, whether it's, you know, Chase or Ed Foley or Frisman, some of the guys that you know really, really well. With Jeremy right now, how are you able to make sure your guys are getting the right amount of work in, Matt, are staying in shape, all those kind of things that can be a little challenge if guys don't have the resources that you're used to having right now?
Yeah, and I think you know, the league and the Players Association, I think all of them they're all kind of negotiating right now what exactly the parameters that we can do. I look at it very simply like this. You know, my job as the head coach has always been, number one, to make sure everyone has everything that they need to be successful. So that's the coaches having the right players. That's, you know, having the right equipment. That's all those things. So right now for our players, you know, whether it's, you know, health and physical support, whether it's emotional support, mental support, you know, whether it's the support learning the playbook or whatever we're allowed to do in terms of giving guys weight programs, giving guys, you know, home kits of equipment that we can send them, giving guys, you know, home rehab. We want to make sure that we're all on top of that and that we are having a relationship with the players where they know that they can call us at any time and say, hey, I need this, I need that. So the exact details of everything is still a little bit in flux as we sit here right now. But, you know, we certainly want to be leaders in whatever we're allowed to give, getting it to the guys. And, you know, when you come from a place like Temple, which I love, you know, you kind of learn, you know, to, hey, figure it out, right? Like if guys are at their home and they don't have access to, you know, this, then I want a strength coach and I want strength assistants who are going to say, what do you have? And, hey, let's figure it out. How can I help you? And so when that's allowed, when that's applicable, then, you know, I know our staff will always do those kind of things.
Matt, when you were the one other coach I want to ask you about is Joe Brady, obviously coming from LSU, but spent time with the New Orleans Saints and was at Penn State as a grad assistant, all those kind of things, but very young. What did you know about Joe Brady, Matt, that made you really target him for, you know, that important position right there? Obviously, be coaching Teddy, you know, going forward. But what did you really covet about Joe, what he accomplished last year and what you knew about him before?
You know, I had a chance, you know, years ago, Joe, when he was at Penn State and William and Mary, you know, had come and visit us once or twice. And I knew about him. And he did an interview this year. It was a Saturday. It was on College Game Day. And he said something that, you know, stood out to me. You know, we're talking about their receivers at LSU. He said, you know, we don't want to put on a show. We want to put on a clinic. And, you know, I loved his offense at LSU, and I really, really respect Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints and that offense and the way that it's constructed. And to see Joe have a college version of that offense was exactly kind of where my mind was. Hey, you know, you have the ability to be as multiple as, the, you know, as New Orleans, but at the same time also bring the cool things that are in college football. And as you talk to him, he's a football guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't fancy himself some guru. He's a guy that just wants to sit there and grind on tape. He's a guy that'll send you a text at 11 o'clock at night, you know, about this guy or that guy. You know, when you talk to him about a route, he'll say, oh, so-and-so ran that, and, you know, 6 years ago in this game. Yeah. He's just one of those guys who lives and dies by the tape. And that's always what I really wanted. You know, whether it was a college coach, whether it was an NFL coach, I wanted guys who don't think they have it all figured out and are in love with, you know, hey, what's new? What's on the cutting edge? How can we do things different? How can we do them better? And as I talked to Joe, it was clear that that's who he was, without an ego, without anything like that. And since working with him, I'm just really excited about who he is and the offense that I think that, you know, he'll put together for us along with his staff.
Matt, in that NFC South division, you're going to face six times a combination of Tom Brady, Matty Ice, and Drew Brees in this NFC South. You know what those three quarterbacks are capable of at the NFL level. Is that something that keeps you up at night, or you're looking forward to that challenge, I'm sure, as well?
Well, first of all, I have the utmost respect for those teams, those players, and those coaches.
Yeah.
And I think if you go back and look at Carolina Panther history, you know, when they've had a winning season in the division, it's been a really good year. And when they haven't, it hasn't been a great year. I think there's only one time that those two things don't correlate, you know, which it makes sense, but it's, you know, it's not count, you know, I mean, it's pretty intuitive, but you have to kind of really look at it and say, man, you have to start at home and win from within. And so, I think as we've tried to put our team together, you know, we're just trying to, you know, get the best pieces that we can in free agency to allow ourselves to be successful. We're trying to make sure that the way that we operate, the way that we do things, we have the right guys for that. But I certainly think as you start looking at those teams, as we enter into the draft, the way that they play, their strengths, the players that they have, you know, become a factor, knowing that the quarterbacks, and not only the quarterbacks, but the receivers that we're going to have to face, it'll truly be a challenge for our defense. And I think it really factors into the draft.
Man, I've known Teddy Bridgewater since his days at Louisville. And, you know, I followed him in, you know, his injury. And I remember when he went to New Orleans, Matt, he could have left after his first year. He had offers out there to go be this, but he really was invested in what the Saints were doing, how Drew Brees went about his day-to-day business, the way Sean Payton grinded. I think he really thought that staying in an extra year was really going to benefit him, even if he didn't play, just being in that culture. And then I talked to him a little bit this year when he was starting, and it did all pay off. And then to be associated with Joe Brady this year, or last year, and then to kind of actually see it all come together with you, what did you see, Matt, when you talked to Teddy Bridgewater, when you saw him, when you were around him? I don't know if he actually got to the building or not before this shutdown stopped. I think he was probably there when you first signed him. But what did you like, Matt?
The day that the signing was announced, I got a text from the SID at Baylor, and it was a picture of me at bowl practice as we got ready for the Sugar Bowl. You know, we practiced at the Saints facility, and Teddy was out there throwing routes with the guys, and he was walking down the you know, we're getting ready to start practice. We're kind of doing like a little walkthrough. He's walking down the sideline. He walks out onto the field, starts talking to Tyquan Thornton, who's our sophomore receiver, kid out of Miami. And, you know, Teddy's one of those guys that everyone in South Florida knows, loves, and respects. And he came over to me and said hello. And I, you know, we had played against him in college. And I just said to him, hey, you know, Teddy, I have so much respect for you, the way that you've bounced back from your injury, the way that everywhere you've been, you've won. You know, even to go 5-0 this year, and now you're not the starter, and you're out here throwing, you know, routes after practice, you know, to get ready in case you have to go in the game. What a message you're sending our team. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had so much respect for him on a personal level, and just wanted to say that and thought it was over. And so now to have him, you know, come here with us, You know, he's a guy that he's won everywhere he's been. He went to Louisville and they won there. You know, before Lamar Jackson, before all those things, you know, he was the one that got them to, you know, to the levels that he did. And, you know, for him to take them to the playoffs in Minnesota and then, you know, to have that injury and come back. And, you know, I always remember the video of him when he finally got a chance to go back out there and play. And you watch his teammates come over to him and how much they felt about him and the way that they came over to talk to him. And then finally, you know, to see what he did this year. Obviously there's some things, you know, he knows the offense, you know, he knows the terminology and all those things, which in a year like this is great. But I just think he's a special person and he's a winner and someone I've had a lot of respect for ever since we played him at Louisville.
Matt, one of the guys that you're going to have the privilege of coaching is Christian McCaffrey, and he's got to be one of those guys you look at and go, man, we can do a lot of things, a lot of different things with a dynamic athlete like Christian McCaffrey. What's your experience been with him so far? I know it's limited with everything going on, but and how can you utilize him in that offense to really get the most out of all the different threats that he brings to your team offensively?
Well, you know, Christian was there on the day that I took the job, you know, so he was one of the first guys I had a chance to meet. And obviously, you know, I can't really see him now, but he's, you know, he's always a phone call away or a text away. And you're right, you know, to label him as one position, you know, is, that doesn't do justice to who he is and what he can do. Yeah. And, you know, that's again, going back to kind of, you know, why I hired Joe. I wanted someone that really could see, you know, the players instead of just the system. And I think Christian's the ultimate example of that. So his ability to go out and be a receiver, to catch the ball in the backfield, to run the football, to protect. I mean, he does it all. He's such a complete and total player. And I'm going to throw into that mix, you know, you also see Curtis Samuel and you see somebody that, you know, going back to even his college days, he is so versatile and so multiple. And so I think when you look at who we have and the players that we have, you know, you say to yourself, well, there's a lot of guys who can really be multiple. And that's really what this league, that's when you become hard to defend. You know, you can be hard to defend because you execute really well, which we certainly want to do. You can, you know, be hard to defend also, though, because you have versatility and it's really hard for people to match up with you. And Christian certainly is the, you know, the epitome of that. And I think Curtis Samuel is right there as well.
Matt, I was in the Jets locker room last year. I was doing something. I saw Robbie Anderson there and I kind of just shouted out at him. And I said, hey, Robbie, after you get done a Matt Rhule training camp, is there any NFL practice that is ever harder than and more challenging than what you went through at Temple? He just laughed. He goes, there's nothing like a Matt Rhule practice. But I almost get the feeling, Matt, that these guys want to be trained hard. They want to be disciplined. They want to know that there's fruits for their labor. And I think Robbie is that guy. I mean, I'm not surprised that you signed him. But I know, like, you know, you signed Keith Kirkwood and Tahir and P.J. Walker, guys that you've known from your days at Temple. And I think there's, you know, when you're talking about the word culture, it gets thrown a lot around a lot. But I think you know what you're looking for, and I think those guys know what to expect.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things, you know, some people might say, you know, why did he sign four guys that, you know, went to Temple? I think the thing that I'll say is, other people were trying to sign those guys too. I think those guys, you know, it's not necessarily just me. It's the strength coach. It's the position coaches. You know, they might have had multiple options. PJ Walker had, you know, 5, 6, 7 options, but he knew what to expect. He knew our culture and the way that we're going to compete and the best guys are going to play. And he knew the way he would get coached. And so he was a part of that. You know, I think Robbie, I think, you know, the chance to play with Teddy Bridgewater was as much a draw for Robbie as probably me. I mean, you know, two South Florida guys and he has a lot of respect for him. And so I think there's a lot of things about it. One of the things that I do know is that, you know, the NFL is hard and football is hard. And you want guys that, you know, are going to compete no matter what. You want guys that, you know, are going to work and grind no matter what. I mean, everyone has a great attitude in the off season, right? Everyone has character right now, coaches, players, everybody. Like, I want to work with guys that I know, you know, when things are hard, are going to continue to work just as hard as if we were, you know, having a great season. I want to work with guys that I can count on right now when everything's virtual, that I know are working and grinding and I don't have to, you know, monitor them as coaches or anything. And I think that's the same with players. And so when you have guys that are great players that are tough, that believe in what you believe in, then, you know, the sky's the limit. And so that's Robbie. You know, Robbie's a fast guy. Robbie's had production, but most importantly about Robbie, he's one of the most competitive people I've ever been around. And I trust him. I believe in him. And, you know, as we went through the process in free agency, you know, I don't think there was a day that Joe Brady didn't come to me and say, you know, let's get Robbie. And, you know, I think he'll bring just a dynamic element. We talked about Curtis. We talked about Christian. You have DJ Moore. We signed Seth Roberts. You have a lot of these, but, you know, you have a guy in Robbie that can really, really stretch the field both horizontally and vertically.
Matt, we'll let you run here. Thank you for your time. I have one question here, Matt. We'll let you get back to your draft meetings because it might involve one of your former players at Baylor. There's a bunch of them that will be in the draft. But Denzel Mims, Matt, was a guy that, you know, really, you know, he really was there, but he started playing when you got there. You saw him when you guys weren't very good, and he was competitive and improving and is a real talent. Can you just give us a thumbnail on Denzel Mims and everybody looking at this really thick and varied wide receiver draft?
Yeah, and I'll talk about him as a, you know, really as his college coach. Unbelievably tough. You know, that was one of my, you know, challenges to him last year was, hey, are you going to be able to play through injury, play through a hamstring? The guy played through everything this year. Can run. Everyone saw the way that he can run. And some people are surprised at that 40 time. Here's the only thing I'll say. When you watch Big 12 players on offense or defense, yeah, I think you have to understand is they're very rarely getting in a huddle. You know, there's an RPO tag to every play. They're not like lining up, you know, getting in the huddle, going out, blocking the corner, coming back into the huddle. And then they're running a route every single play. It's 120 degrees. It's 115 degrees. They're running 75 plays. And I think guys in the Big 12 on offense and defense sometimes just get worn down from the style of play. And it might not look how fast they are, but it certainly translates when you see them get on the track. So he's tough. He's fast. He's worked hard on his ball skills. And I don't know if there's a guy, you know, that's had more game-winning catches over his career than Denzel has. And so, you know, that's me talking not as the Panthers head coach, but as his former college coach. I think whoever gets him is going to get a great competitor and a guy that's going to be a deep threat. And, you know, he got to the Senior Bowl and into more of a pro-style system, was able to move around, was able to motion, was able to do those things. And I think some of the questions people have were answered at the Senior Bowl and then certainly at the Combine.
Yeah, Matt, his overtime touchdown against TCU was – something we've all seen over and over again. Matt, we really appreciate you coming on this podcast and sharing some of your insights with us. It's difficult times for everybody. I know if there's one guy that can get through this the right way, it's you. So we wish you the best of luck, Matt, and we'll be in touch down the road. And we're all pulling for what you do at Carolina and how you're going to turn things around there. We know it's coming.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you guys.
Special thanks to Matt Rhule. He's great, isn't he, Baldy?
He doesn't have any bad days. I mean, he's the same guy every day, and it's always upbeat, but not just like pie in the sky upbeat. I mean, he's just a naturally upbeat guy that will always give you another side to whatever you're thinking, no matter what the circumstances are. And he's an amazing guy to be around because you can't help but feel like you haven't done enough when you're around Matt Rhule. Like there's more to do.
He's the leader. He's a leader of men. You can just get that sense from him, right? And he's going to have tremendous success at the NFL level as well. Baldy, before we get to five questions for Baldy here on episode 6, we got to get to the 2010s all-decade team roster. And we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. There's some unanimous choices in here, including, of course, Tom Brady, unanimous choice. Adrian Peterson was a running back, unanimous choice. Joe Thomas as an offensive tackle, and Yanda as well as an offensive guard. They're the only unanimous choices, but the other quarterback is Aaron Rodgers. That's a good fit for the 2010s, right? And I don't know who else you could consider in that. Maybe Russell Wilson could be in that category as a potential guy, but Aaron Rodgers seems like the right player to be the other quarterback, right?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the selection of Aaron Rodgers, but you're right. Russell Wilson has had an amazing decade.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been 8 straight years. He started every single game for Seattle. They've been to 2 Super Bowls and won one. I mean, you could certainly put him in that category. That's a guy that you definitely have to look at.
The other running backs, including Adrian Peterson, were LeSean McCoy, Marshawn Lynch, and Frank Gore. Oddly enough, he still keeps ticking along. Frank Gore had that great Eagle career for about a half a minute when Chip Kelly thought they had him signed and they didn't. But Frank Gore in that list as well. The wide receivers, I want to get your thoughts on these 4 guys. Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, and Julio Jones. Boy, any quarterback, if you're lining up those 4 guys, you're going to have a lot of success throwing the football.
No question. And really, you know, Calvin, you know, I mean, it didn't last as long. You definitely have to put Julio in there. I'm a little surprised Antonio Brown isn't on the list, only because of what he did for five straight years in this decade. It's almost unsurpassed, his 5 years in Pittsburgh there. Now, I know it ended badly here, but this year. But there was a five-year run there where it's pretty tough to match his numbers.
Yeah, and he's a guy, maybe more, the most impressive feat in the NFL is that Mike Tomlin kept him under control for 5 years.
Well, that's what we're finding out now.
Yeah, right? You know, that, I mean, that's amazing.
What we're finding out now is we wonder what he had to, you know, hide, or what he had to deal with that never, ever got outside the huddle or outside of, you know, Heinz Field over there.
Maybe the 2010s decade would the position of the greatest strength, maybe in its history, was tight end with Rob Gronkowski and Travis Kelce. There's been some great tight ends in the NFL and pairs of them. If you go back and you look at some of the great tight ends that played in this league, but in 2010 to have a pretty full decade of Rob Gronkowski and Travis Kelce is incredibly impressive.
Yeah, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I mean obviously Gonzalez was a big part of the decade too.
Yeah,
he might have ended, you know, probably too prematurely to include him. But yes, I mean, Gronkowski is, to me, I don't care what anybody says. Like when I hear Rob Gronkowski's name, I don't even blink about being a first ballot Hall of Fame player. He was beyond dominant. He was the best red zone threat that we may have ever seen. And he's the single best blocking tight end that I have seen since I really started studying the game. Now, you know, maybe you could go back and you could find other guys that could do that, maybe going as far back as John Barry. But, you know, to me, or John Mackey, but to me, he's the most dominant blocker. And in the evolution of the tight end position, he evolved the position because there's really not anyone quite like a guy that could line up at wide receiver and be unguardable. And then go to the end tight end position and block, you know, a stud defensive end and, you know, bury him. And so there's been nobody that had that combination like Gronk.
Yeah. The defensive side of the ball, only two unanimous selections there. J.J. Watt at the defensive end position and Von Miller at linebacker. But you have some huge names here, including Julius Peppers, Fletcher Cox, Aaron Donald. And Nagasu is on there as well. Luke Kuechly, who just retired. Patrick Willis, some big names here as well, including Richard Sherman as a quarterback and Darrell Revis. And Patrick Peterson, your three corners. Those three certainly worthy for that honor of being on the All-Decade team.
Well, I know Revis and Sherman went back and forth this year. It was kind of a silly argument as far as I'm concerned. I mean, they're completely different players and different systems. But we've never seen a player quite like Darrell Revis and what he did. I mean, there was a five-year run there with the Jets where he shut down everybody that he played week in, week out. I mean, there was truly just one Revis Island. There was really nobody that comes close to being able to do what he did. It was a remarkable skill. He did it without a lot of fanfare. He didn't beat his chest. He got paid now. He got paid probably more than any other corner that's ever played this game, if you look at him aggregate-wise. So people respected, you know, what he did when it came time to cash in checks, but he was remarkable. Kuechly was really, to me, a standalone Mike linebacker for what he did coming into the league and what he did year in, year out with the volume of tackles. Bobby Wagner would be close, really close, because he's been a great, great player. And so, I mean, he's if there's Kuechly, then there's Wagner that is the next closest, and he's right on his tails because he's almost every bit the player, if not all the player that he is. So that's a guy that I would definitely give consideration to when you come to the linebackers, the inside linebackers.
And the two coaches is pretty much chalk here. It's Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll.
Yeah. Pretty yeah, obviously. I would say so. I mean, you know, Pete Carroll, he goes from USC. He goes, you know, he gets another, you know, whack at the NFL after being with the Jets and with the Patriots. And all he did for five straight years, this has never been done, five straight years, the Seattle Seahawks gave up the fewest points in the league. I mean, the Steel Curtain didn't do that in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
But for 5 years in a row, and some fact checker could, you know, do that for me, but I'm pretty sure I have it right, Jason, that they gave up the fewest points in the league 5 years in a row. I mean, that's Pete Carroll challenging players, turning over the roster, competition, everything that he preaches is real. And, you know, one thing about Pete, I mean, Belichick is Belichick, and he's really in a category by himself, because you have to look way beyond this decade and go, of any coach in any sport, in any in any era, I mean, Belichick is basically rivals anybody, if not better than anybody. But if Pete Carroll is the second, the one thing I loved about Pete is he's never been afraid to play young players early. And, you know, and you make mistakes as a young player, and you live with the mistakes, and sometimes it costs you games. But those young players become great players, and they become cornerstone players. And, you know, he's never been afraid to do that, putting the players on the field and letting them get seasoned. Some coaches are afraid to do that for those mistakes. But I love Pete that he's never had that fear about playing players that he saw greatness in and let them, you know, learn by experience.
Yeah, and he's got a great energy about him as well. That just seems like
he's 68 years old, Jason. I mean, he's remarkable. He's on the field with his gloves on, having a catch before every single game. You can't get Pete to do anything but smile and come right back at you with fire and brimstone over any subject it is. There's a lot to admire about Pete Carroll, I'll tell you that. He's got a lot of good coaching left in him.
Yeah, you're right about that, and they've had a lot of success in the decade as well. And when you talk about Belichick, I mean, you're talking about John Wooden. Those are the kind of things that you're thinking of when you bring him up. He is in a level all his own. Well, it is Baldy. It is time for five questions for Baldy. Yeah. We end every episode with five great questions for you. So let's get to the questions for this episode. Question number one, five questions from Baldy, and these are coming from listeners. You put out the tweet on Twitter. Baldy's Twitter put it out, and we got great responses. And we start with Jay Reinhart, who says, who will be the first running back drafted in 16 days?
So there's three running backs that, you know, that everybody's looking at. There's Swift, you know, a Jersey kid right here from this area. There's Jonathan Taylor, and, you know, there's Dobbins. And so, I mean, you can kind of throw them all. But I have a feeling Swift is going to be the first running back taken, but I love Dobbins. I love Dobbins at Ohio State. He's from a small town in Texas. He's dominated the Big Ten since the day he stepped on campus. He did not run a 40, so it's, you know, at the combine when Taylor did at Wisconsin. And so, you know, Taylor has been a sprint champion. I think all three are worthy of being the first round picks. I think all three will be taken in the top 40 picks, but I think Swift will be the first running back taken.
Okay, that is question number one. Five questions for Baldy. Let's head to question number two. Joe Esposito tweets in and says, which of the big four offensive tackles stand out to you the most, Becton, Thomas, Wirfs, or Wills?
Well, I think Wills is the most consistent player and the most dominant player right now, the right tackle from Alabama. But I love Becton at Louisville just because I haven't seen a guy that size move that well. And to me, he has the upside of being a dominant player and improving your offensive line the most. Wirfs is the most talented player, might be the most talented offensive line we've seen since maybe Lane Johnson came into the league. He's the only offensive lineman for Kirk Ferentz that started as a 18-year-old true freshman. And if you will look at him as a true freshman against a guy like Nick Bosa, he didn't look like a true freshman. But, you know, I think he's got some weaknesses that I want to see addressed. I mean, he does get top heavy. He does forward lean a little bit. That kind of concerns you, but his talent and his tape, for the most part, is really, really good. And then Thomas at Georgia has got great talent. His feet, though, are just all over the place, and he looks sloppy at times. Now, he has the ability to recover at the college level. I don't know that you could play that way at the NFL. I think he needs a lot of technique work to become, to me, a dominant offensive lineman. He has the potential of being it. I'm not saying he can't, but it looks too sloppy. His footwork looks too sloppy to me right now. But look, they're all going to probably be taken in the top 15 picks. And everybody has them sort of rated differently, but that's how I look at them.
Maybe a little bit of a project for a team there with that footwork. Let's go to Matt Reichel, and you can tweet these into @BaldyNFL. He said, who will the Eagles draft at number 21 overall, and will they aim to move up? We all know that Howie Roseman is a guy, a bit of a gunslinger, Baldy. If he sees an opportunity, he likely will take it. But I guess what Matt's asking is, what's their need at around 21?
Well, I mean, look, they will tell you that, you know, since they drafted Carson, that they'll never stop building around Carson. So, and I take them at their word because they have done that. So if that's the case, then there's a couple things. One, if Ruggs is there at 21, I don't think they blink. I think they take Henry Ruggs from Alabama. I doubt he'll be there at 21. But if he would slide a little bit, I can see how he's going to get him. I could see them taking Kenneth Murray at linebacker. There's a huge need at linebacker. They want to get younger and faster at every position. Well, they would get really fast at middle linebacker with Kenneth Murray. I think there's an interest there. There's a possibility there. I think that if a guy that they didn't love at 21 wasn't there, I don't think they would think twice about moving back and taking a guy like Cesar Ruiz, you know, a kid out of Camden and Michigan that might be the best center in this business. They have shown that they're not afraid to draft a replacement for a great player, and I think the replacement would be Jason Kelce. I think he has flexibility to play guard and center, and so I could see, you know, some excitement in doing that. But I think the first choice is wide receiver. My choice is Ruggs. I'm not saying it's the Eagles, but it just depends on who's there and who – where – would they think about moving up with one of their eight picks, some of their eight picks, to go get a star wide receiver to continue to build around Carson?
Yeah, give Carson the weapons that he needs. Josiah tweets in question number 4 and says, who's the top cornerback prospect in this draft behind Okuda?
Well, there is, you know, C.J. Henderson, you know, at Florida, who I know he's a talented player. He doesn't tackle well at all, you know, and I think there's a real question to me about C.J. Henderson at Florida. He tests off the charts. You know, he's big. He's got a lot of, you know, great tape. He runs under a 4.4. I mean, I do love Henderson, but, you know, I look at a guy like Jalen Johnson at Utah, and I go, okay, here's a guy that runs just about as well, has similar size, but really tackles much, much better and is a more complete player. So to me right now, there's other players, but me right now after Okuda, I think I like Jalen Johnson the most at Utah. I think that would be my second choice. He's probably a top 20 pick, maybe a top 25 pick, but that's where I stand right now at the quarter position.
Okay, last question, 5 questions for Baldy. And this one, again, they come into @BaldyNFL. Tank, great name, by the way.
Yeah.
Thoughts on Michael Pittman Jr. and where he may land?
I love Pitt. You know, when you look at Michael Pittman at USC, I mean, first of all, his father was a great player. I loved his father. You know, when he was a running back in the league, he was a big, tough kid, won a championship in Tampa, been around the game a long, long time, but he's got almost unique size at 6'5" and 6'4" and 224 pounds. And still runs, you know, a 4.5 40. I love Mike Pittman. He's probably, if I said, is he a top 5 receiver for me? Yes, I think he is in this draft. If you said, okay, there's Judy and there's Ruggs and there's Jefferson. I mean, and there's CeeDee Lamb. I'm putting Pittman as my 5th wide receiver. And I'm not so sure he can't be, he can't be a dominant player in this league. I think he has everything it takes to be really, really good. Pittman to me is a first round pick. You know, I mean, I think there's probably, you know, eight players that are worthy of first round draft status at wide receiver. I put Pittman in that category, but he's my 5th wide receiver right now. And I'm really high on him. I think he's going to be a really good player.
We got a bonus question too. John 71 on Twitter asks, where do you expect Tua to end up. Does he end up at 2 to the Washington Redskins? Does he slip?
I think the way this draft is going to go, Jason, I said it going way before this outbreak of this virus and the pandemic and the shutdown that we're all involved in right now globally. I said that the draft was going to go Burrow and Tua, 1 and 2. We've seen it many, many times throughout the history of the NFL. These quarterbacks, and I know that there's an injury concern with Tua, but if you can get over that, he's got great tape and he's a great player, a great kid with great character and a great family and great talent. I think, I don't know if it's the Redskins taking him number 2, Jason. You know, maybe somebody has to move up, whether it's Miami, Detroit, Jacksonville, I don't
Chargers.
Know. I mean, somebody,
Chargers, yeah.
Chargers, I mean, there's a lot of teams that are looking for a quarterback that may feel like Tua is their Deshaun Watson, is their Patrick Mahomes. We got to go get him. And so I think that's the way the draft is going to go. I know, obviously, it, there's many scenarios that don't have it like that, but that's how I see it. I see Burrow and Tua going 1 and 2, and nothing that I've seen is really going to change that right now. We've seen plenty of teams trade up and give up a great deal to get what they think is their franchise quarterback. And he has all the intangibles that you want to be that guy. So I think that's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, and the funny thing is you look at the mock drafts, and as you get closer and closer to the drafts, the quarterbacks, they always start rising no matter what, because that's the position you need. If you don't have a quarterback, if you can check that quarterback box, Baldy,
yeah,
heading into your any offseason, and you feel really comfortable with who you have back there under center, then you, it's a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
It's a different ballgame. I mean, you know, Patrick Mahomes is the latest example of that.
Yep.
And how quickly, you know, Kansas City became a viable threat in the AFC, and how they look like they're going to be a viable threat for the foreseeable future. I mean, it's exactly what you want. He's going to make them competitive every week and every year for the whole prize. And so that's what everybody wants. And so, yes, it's how you build your team. You draft that guy, you give him all the resources you need, and then you start building on your defense. That's what Kansas City did, and that's why, you know, they won their, you know, their second championship in 50 years.
Yep, and it's a great recipe for success. Baldy, that's going to put a wrap on episode number 6. Stay healthy, stay safe. Everybody else do the same, and we'll talk to you next week on another episode of Baldy's Breakdowns. Great stuff, Baldy.
My pleasure, Jason. Look forward to talking to you. We're getting close here. We're 16 days away as we do this podcast to the draft. I don't think it's going to change. And so the intensity for, you know, how teams can change their fortunes, how it is truly everybody can turn their franchise around, it gives everybody hope. We're counting the days down here, Jason. Look forward to talking to you next week about it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been episode 6 of Baldy's Breakdown.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.